Hello, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Looking forward to hearing some of the stories from Bennett School District, which is going to be the focus today. And in a minute, I'm going to introduce Keith Yake from Bennett School District, who's the CFO, and Brian Perry to kind of tell their story. But I was just going to do a quick context setting. Our focus at Health Rosetta is about empowering community-owned health plans. And just to contextualize that, we define community in the broadest sense. And in a community can be an employer, it can be a school district, it can be a union, could be a place. And what we're seeing, and I think the scenario we're in with the COVID pandemic is people realizing, health starts at home. Doesn't start in a pill, doesn't start in a hospital. And that's really a big theme of ours. And so what we're going to do as we go through is, without knowing it, Brian and Keith have gone through this kind of straightforward five-step process that we talk about. It makes up this acrostic local. And it's very straightforward. I'm not saying it's easy, but it's a very straightforward process where there's five steps. Four of the five steps are either invisible to the member or only a positive. And, a lot of times people are worried about, is a benefits change going to be disruptive? Now, put aside the fact that I would argue, being the undisputed world leader in medical bill-driven bankruptcies and half the workforce having their deductibles higher than their life savings, sounds pretty disruptive to me. We're very sensitive to that. And so people go through this process in different ways. Some of the questions I'm going to ask Brian and Keith will follow this process. And so, as we go through, I'll explain that. And so, again, Keith Yake is the CFO of Bennett School District. Brian Perry is one of the advisors in the Health Rosetta program. And I want to call out, what I've seen with Brian. It's something that we see throughout our community, but it's really notable. It's certainly it's kind of this continuum, right? It's better to have a job than not have a job. But it's definitely better to have a career than a job. But what's even better than a career is a calling. And that really is people who are driven by a purpose and really driven by transforming things. And Brian's evident, this has become a calling, a passion of his. And it's real work to do these things. This is not what everybody's doing. So I think it's worth acknowledging that before we get in. So I'm going to ask a few questions. Again, kind of going through this process, but let's just set a little context. Keith and Brian, can you sort of provide a little backdrop on Bennett School District? My understanding is it's not quite the size of LA Unified School District. Give me a little sense of the number of employees or teachers and staff that are on the plan. And, a little bit of the history, what's happened over the last 5 or 10 years in terms of, premium increases and, curious, if you did see increases, did you get more when you paid more? Because that's the way most of the rest of our world works. Or did you get less when you paid more? So if you could kind of go through that journey give us the ups and downs and a little of the background there. So take it away.
Yeah, I could tip this off, Brian. So all right. Bennett Schools is we're a school district about 20 to 30 miles east of Denver. So we're actually the closest eastern bordering to the Denver metro area as far as a rural school. We currently have around 1,200 students and around 150 staff members. We are growing at an exponential rate out here. We are anticipating about 20,000 new homes in 10 to 15 years. So it's going to be a pretty good sized community once all said and done. To answer your question, I've been there for 13 years, and our premiums And our spend on medical is actually down about 10% from where it was 13 years ago. So we are actually down by going through this method. It's efficient and it works. You know, as a matter of fact, when we tell people that we're down, most of them, you know, don't believe us and they're scared of it because they don't understand it. But you know, this plan has been a huge blessing to our district. I mean, we are one of the only districts out in the area that's been able to give consistent pay raises, not get rid of programs, you know, hire more teachers to keep class sizes smaller and things like that. And majority of this savings has been through the health insurance that's allowed us to do so. So I just lead in and I'll let Brian finish off on that.
Well, yeah. Well, I appreciate that, Keith. I like to call Keith, Keith was a great client for a long time, but one of the best things about Keith is he's like a tough coach because he always demands more and he always expects a better solution. And so that really held my feet to the fire to go out and learn and develop different kinds of programs. You know, I think if you'd asked me 10 years ago, I couldn't wait to get out of this business because it was I just didn't feel like there was any real value. It was just, you know, deliver bad news. That was kind of my job, I felt like. And, you know, through I think, affiliation with Keith and Bennett, it really pushed me to be better and find better solutions. And so as we, you know, went down this chain of evolving this plan, you know, it's been a godsend for me because it's been, you know, like I said, it's allowed me to learn and grow. And we've tried some things. We haven't always succeeded, but I think that we've, you know, the results for these past 7 years have been pretty great. So I'm proud of it for sure.
And tell me a little bit about sort of how did things change? Did that change happen 13 years ago and it just stayed flat, or was it going up and then you reversed it? Or how did that sort of process work?
So I guess my biggest thing for that is I met Brian, gosh, it's probably been 7 or 8 years ago, something like that. And, maybe even a little bit longer, but we were going through a process. We were just on a traditional plan, I think through Cigna or one of those companies. And, you know, 1 year we had a deal where we spent about $1 million or so in premiums, and we only had really about $180,000 worth of claims that were turned in that year. So we were thinking, how can we keep this money in our pocket? And I ran into Brian and he had a solution to, you know, start the self-funded and start going through the RBR process and go everything we've done. And I mean, we put, you know, well over $1 million back into our books by being able to keep the money instead of paying it to profit for Big Med.
Yeah, interesting. And, you know, the first, you know, letter in this process, this local process is, you know, learn how to sort of leave behind, you know, status quo. And, you know, my observation is nothing happens until mindset shift happens, then shift happens. And, you know, at some point there is this awakening. As I always tell people, healthcare isn't expensive. What's expensive is profiteering and price gouging, you know, because clinicians in the model today only get 27 cents of every dollar. And so, you know, sometimes people are surprised when people can be spending so much less with superior benefits. But what was that like? And, you know, understandably, you know, given the history, I can imagine teachers or other administrators or school board members being skeptical, right? Like, how can you actually do something that's saving money when everybody else is complaining about costs going up? Aren't we going to lose teachers? All that kind of thing. What was kind of that dynamic internal to the organization?
I think the evolution in that, you know, if you look at local, you know, what Keith really bought into the first year was the idea that we can unbundle, right? That we can peel apart the plan, pick an independent TPA, get our own stop loss, pick our own pharmacy benefit manager, you know, work with our own network, and then we can bring it all together. You know, back then my big sale, and this is still true, is that, you know, instead of one or two companies coming to quote our business, we're going to be quoting on every single component of our plan. And because we have so many different companies competing for all of those components, the market forces on your plan are significantly better. And that I think was the first step. I think probably maybe Keith would agree with this, is that that's probably why we got hired, was that we brought that unbundled solution to the table to say, look, let's go find a different TPA, let's find a different PBM, and if we need to make changes, then we just change that single component. But again, the market forces when you unbundle are significantly more powerful than if you're just quoting the three or four carriers that might want to quote your business.
Yeah, and to branch off that, to answer your question, it was terrifying. The first thing about it is it was a norm, and you know, I had to sell it to my school board and sell it to my superintendent at the time, and everybody was very concerned because we've never done anything like this before, and they've never heard anything like this before, but we decided it was worth the risk, and I'll tell you what, it is, the rewards have been far exceeded of what we expected.
And do they, I mean, sometimes these things can happen because the awful didn't happen, it sort of gets forgotten, you know. Do they, like today, you know, your typical school board member or, you know, the superintendent, how aware are they of the difference between, you know, what you're doing versus what the rest of the folks or many other folks are doing?
It's probably for you, Keith. You know that leadership team a little better than I do.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You're breaking up slow there. What was that? What was that again?
Just curious about the, you know, what's the perception today with your school leadership? Do they recognize that they've done something that's quite different and had a different outcome? And how, you know, is their support stronger, the same? You know, what's the dynamic there?
No, they're very supportive. You know, to be honest with you, we had, I think the biggest thing was, is we had, and I'm sure Brian will touch this later, but we had one of our employees that had a cancer claim that was well over $200,000. And by the time it was said and done, it settled for like $30,000. So, I mean, they were just floored about the discrepancy of what the charge was and what they actually settled for. So it kind of brought it to light, what actually happens behind the scenes. So we've seen through several processes how this process works. I mean, like I said, we put, you know, with our smaller budget of our smaller school, you know, we put over $1.4 million to $1.6 million now, you know, back into the staff, back into, you know, investing back into the children. So instead of just wasting it on profits for Big Med, I mean, we've had the same coverage, we've had the same deductibles. I mean, we you know, if anything else, Brian's added service to us. He's gave us more than we had before. So no, everybody, they're very supportive. Like I said, when they started, they were very fearful. Now they're very supportive of the process.
And is the way that you've paid for benefits brokerage, benefits consulting, benefits advising, whatever you want to call it, has that evolved over the last 13 years?
Well, yeah, because like when we first started, we were just going through a big broker here in Colorado, and you know, they would bring us the same traditional thing. You know, they give us the quotes for the Kaiser Permanente and the Humana and the Aetna and the Cigna, and whichever one was the best is what we picked. And you know, the only flexibility we had is if we increased our deductibles, you know, that might put a little skin in the game to drop the price a little. Where we have now, I feel like we have creative control over our plan. I think we can actually make decisions. We can alter things. I mean, if you know, for example, like a couple of years ago, one of the things that our employees were unhappy with is they would go in and get some blood work done or some radiology scans or like, you know, CT scan, something like that, and they were getting bills for you know sometimes $1,000, you know. And one of the things we did is Brian recognized that, we heard, listened to the people, we went back and we adjusted that to where we put like $100 deductible on it. So I mean, it's nice to be able to have the flexibility to adjust these things that are important. So that's one of the other big accomplishments with this plan.
Yeah. You know, Brian, you obviously have a number of clients, some who've made the shift, some who haven't. If you look at the rough per capita spend on, and we'll get into some of the other elements, which particularly the primary care, which is interesting. But if you look at sort of the overall per capita spend, how does it compared to sort of maybe other school districts, other employers, you know, is it a little bit less, a lot less? How is that?
Significantly less. I mean, I think we're running, and I haven't finished this year's data because it doesn't really end until July 1st. And this is going to be a little bit of a weird year because of COVID. But as of March, we were running at about just under $90 per employee per month in claims, which is significantly lower than where we were even the year before. And we were running at about that time at about 180. So, you know, that's pretty low when you just look at the total claim spend. Then, you know, you tack on some administrative costs, and then, you know, to look at a premium equivalency, we would have to be, you know, at about somewhere about $325 to $380 per employee per month in premium, if that's what you wanted to call it. And so that is significantly lower than anything we could find. I think the last time one of the board members about 4 years ago wanted to see some fully funded quotes, and you know, we were looking at two or three, you know, $2,500 deductibles for about $550 per employee per month. And so, you know, the by any of the benchmarks, we are nearing about half of what, you know, a typical employer spends. You know, across our book of business, I would say that this definitely is the best performing financial plan. We've been the most aggressive for sure. But most of our clients run, you know, 25 to 30% below the benchmarks, I would say. No question.
Yeah. Okay.
And I will confirm that we are actually coming in about 50% of what our max aggregate budget is. And we do that every year pretty consistently, even with bad years. We generally come in around that number. It's just an amazing plan the way it's set up.
Yeah, great to hear. Talk to me a little bit more about, you know, the C in the local is carve out PBM. Sounds like you did that. Things much different? Is it just better priced? Are you having to drive into Denver to get drugs, or can you get them locally, or how does that all work?
Yeah, we had a PBM vendor that I think was I would give them about a C plus in terms of you know, cost containments. We were able to secure rebates, which is a pretty unusual around here. When we talk to employer groups about rebates, most of them don't even know that they exist because they, you know, generally stay with the carrier. We were able to secure rebates and get a decent contract, but it wasn't what I would call a fiduciary contract. It wasn't a contract that said we have your best interest at heart. And it wasn't a contract, this is important, where we paid the same no matter what the cost of the fill. So, you know, right now we pay the exact same amount, whether it's a $10,000 drug or a $10 drug. And there's no incentive for the PBM to sell us a higher priced drug because they're getting a better rebate. And so what we've seen, you know, this last 2 years we've been on with this PBM is just tremendous savings. We're getting less in rebates because we're clinically managing away from some of those high cost drugs through a couple different programs with DPC and our PBM. And then we also source drugs from Canada. So many of the employees are actually, you know, going to Canada to get those drugs mail ordered. And we do that for free. They seem very happy with that program. You know, it hasn't been without its hiccups early, but we certainly got those solved and it's going really well. So, you know, we just made sure that there was a couple local pharmacies in the town just east of Bennett that some of our employees used. And we just made sure that they had joined the network, and it was pretty seamless after that.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of hiccups, not just on, you know, the drug spending, what, you know, and Keith mentioned some about obviously the concerns up front and the about the switch, but you know, anything great comes with hiccups, as you say, and there's challenges, and you know, you're gonna get punched in the nose now and again, and all that. So, give me some of, you know, are there any war stories, and kind of how did you deal with that and come out of that?
We certainly have. I have plenty of war stories, for sure. We, you know. I would say that the beginning of this process was very rough. I wouldn't say it was rough, but it was certainly, we were a little bit in the dark in a lot of decisions, right? You kind of, you know, when you're out there, I think on a cutting edge basis, trying things that, you know, people around you aren't really doing, you're a little bit at the mercy of a vendor rep, or, you know, somebody else that you talk to as you're kind of trying to vet the different solutions. And we stubbed our toe a little bit. I think, Keith, it's fair to say that, you know, on a couple of our TPA choices, we stubbed our toe. We stubbed our toe on one of our network vendors. So we had some, we definitely had some issues. I think that, you know, as we've gone along, we've gotten, you know, better at this, certainly at Peak Benefits. But what I would say is, you know, that is the best thing about the Health Rosetta, in my opinion, and a long list of great things. That's the best thing. You know, the ability to go on a national basis and talk to advisors all over the country about what works, what doesn't work. I mean, I know that I've had probably 30 to 40 conversations with, you know, other Health Rosetta advisors about, you know, different strategies and most importantly, different vendors, so that we always know that we've got a good, a good review of what they really can and can't do. So that now I think over the last four years, other than PBM, we've been very consistent in who we've used and how it's gone, and it's gone very well. But in the beginning, you know, we were having some trouble with, we went through about three TPAs before we got to this one that we really landed on, and they do a great job for us. So it was tough. But like I said, that, you know, moving forward, you know, with that Health Rosetta affiliation, you know, everybody in the community does such a good job of sharing. I know I've had a lot of conversations and made different recommendations, and we're able to have that national sort of brain trust to say, you know, who works, who does what they say they're going to do, and it's been very valuable for sure.
Keith, you want to add anything in terms of, you know, obstacles, hiccups, trips and falls, and all that?
No, I say, Brian, on that, there was a lot of shifting, a lot of growth, a lot of learning, because this was kind of a new process, you know. I mean, we didn't know exactly what we were getting into, so the process would be as we talk. I mean, me and Brian talk all the time, but I mean, we would talk at least quarterly and say, you know, hey, what's working, what's not, and, you know, kind of adjust it on the fly as we're going. And then at the end of the year, when we're doing plan design, I mean, we'd really sit down, we'd really look at that heavily. I mean, that was the biggest thing, is what's really good, what do you not want to change, and what do we need to change? Every year there was some change. I'll be honest, this is the best year. Every year it keeps getting better. And I mean, I'm confident that the plan design we have right now is about the best we're probably going to be able to get, unless he can surprise me a little bit better.
Yeah.
I would say too, to add to that, Dave, and you know, the biggest challenge, I think, and Keith would probably agree with this, as we think about it, is, you know, the communication to the employees was always a really hard barrier, because, you know, it took them a long time to realize that I'm not an insurance guy. I don't work for the insurance companies. I'm not trying to deny claims. These are the kind of things that employees generally see when they see, you know, the insurance. And about 3 years ago, Keith, I think they kind of all had a eureka moment at one of those, at an open enrollment meeting, when I basically said, you know, I don't work for insurance. I work for you guys. I'm on Team Bennett. I'm not on Team Anthem or Team United or Team, you know, and I think as they started to realize that, in the conversations I've had with the employees, they're much more amiable now than they were, say, 5 years ago, when they kind of saw me as the adversary a little bit. And now I think that, you know, as I move forward with new clients, I'm always trying to stress that right up front. This is, you know, I work for you guys, and we're here to help you, and we are on your team, you know, so that's that's a real important thing that I learned along the way, was to communicate our role in making their plan successful.
Yeah. I mean,
well, then one of the other quick things too, I wanted to add on to that too, is the doctor's offices. I mean, just with the plan design we had, that was one of the other hiccups we had, is just getting everybody on board, especially the local clinics and things like that. Of, you know, the people bring in our plan, who's covering you, you know, you know, how's this working? So yeah. that was another big piece that we had to address up front.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think the thing that people, you know, talking about being on Team Bennett versus, you know, Team whatever carrier, and, you know, the issue is when people are, you know, representing themselves as being, you know, a advocate for the buyer, but they're paid by the seller, you know, even the best people are going to have issues. I mean, it's some way, you know, in some ways it's not unlike if, you know, I was suing Brian and I also paid for his attorney, that would be a little weird. That's kind of how it has been working. And so, you know, that is notable in terms of that relationship. Well, let's talk a little bit about the A in local is add value-based primary care. I mean, to me, this is probably the most exciting part of the plan, and where, you know, of the four steps, it's, you know, the first one where people will notice, right? But in a good way. But still, it's a journey there, no doubt. So tell me a little bit about, like, what was the landscape of primary care before you brought in, I believe it was NextEra for direct primary care. What's the story in terms of prior to that, Bennett? You know, there are a lot of primary care docs there that were fee for service. That, you know, how did that work? And then what's going on now? And what is this direct primary care thing actually mean for, you know, just the regular teacher who's, you know, maybe has some health issues, you know, and what is that all looking like right now?
Well, I'll let Keith speak to the teachers for sure, but I'll start off by saying that, you know, what we saw was pretty significant numbers in terms of just utilization. We know that teachers are high utilizers. Education is a high utilizing group. And we had a, you know, I think a $30 copay, if I remember right, I know it was a $500 deductible. And I noticed that we still were having a lot of claims, and we're still having, you know, people that were, you know, having trouble with a $200, you know, bill of some sort that came from the doctor's office, that sort of thing. And there was a, you know, pretty significant cost. The cost to the employees was running at about, oh, I want to say about $45,000 to $50,000 in out-of-pocket costs. Well, you know, that's $800 or $900 per employee, if you think about that. So that's $800 out of every employee's pocket. And so as we started to kind of figure what we could do about that, I called a couple different direct primary care companies to talk to them about, you know, what their services cost, that sort of thing. We settled on NextEra mostly because they're not, you know, private equity backed, and that's something that's really important to me. That they seem to have the best, I think, value proposition, where the value ended up with the patients and the clients, so to speak, instead of, you know, the value trickling off into investors. And so we scoured the market there, sat down with Keith and the superintendent, Robin, and brought Dr. Flanagan in from NextEra, and just had a conversation about, you know, not only the effect we could have on the health of the teacher by getting them as much care as they needed, but just as importantly, or probably not as importantly, but certainly important, is the effect on the downstream claims. What was going on with the hospital-owned doctor's offices that were then, you know, grabbing those patients and then seeing that appointment as an opportunity to get them off into the hospital for high dollar care. Dr. Flanagan made, I think, some, what I thought were a little bit outrageous claims about what they could do for the cost savings moving forward based on the, you know, the incentives that were out of alignment. And I can tell you, Dr. Flanagan actually undersold what he was able to deliver, because this year the numbers are phenomenal in terms of what we've been able to save the employees in out-of-pocket costs. We've put about $530 back into every employee's pocket in co-pays, co-insurance, and deductible expenses that's now taking place in the direct primary care office. But just as importantly, the downstream claim effect has been phenomenal, to the point where, you know, if you think about a roughly, you know, $550,000 spend, we have saved $170,000 in claims this year. And that's after the fixed cost of the NextEra subscription, $171,000 in claims. And so that, you know, again, you know, what we were able to do with that, you know, God only knows what Keith, you know, the positive effect that's going to have. We were able to secure a 20% reduction in stop loss on the max and 10% reduction in stop loss on the fixed, just by reducing our claims. It was, so like I said, it was way beyond what I ever expected in terms of positive results, for sure.
Well, I think it's, you know, I'd like Keith to jump in, but I think one thing it's good to people remind people is, you know, typically direct primary care can reduce ER visits, surgeries, hospitalization days, at least 30%. Because of just being there and being proactive, and there is unfortunately a lot of overtreatment. And what there really is, and it's impossible to price gouge or surprise bill somebody on an ER visit that never happened or a surgery that didn't need to happen. And, you know, sadly, you look at something like lower back pain, right? The second most common reason people go to the doctor is lower back pain, and it's the number one driver of disability. It's also the number one driver of opioid prescriptions, even though there's zero evidence that opioids are effective for lower back pain. It's really nothing more than, you know, if we're driving down the car and driving down the road in my car and it started making a bunch of noise, I could crank up the radio. And you might not hear that noise, but nobody would think the car is fixed. It's kind of what an opioid does for lower back pain. So it's one of those areas where I see direct primary care helping a lot. In fact, you know, the analysis I've done so far on that issue, because the last book I wrote was about the opioid crisis, when you have proper primary care in place, the chances of opioid addiction go down incredibly, like almost to zero, but, you know, darn close to that. But Keith, why don't you explain a little bit more, you know, from the teacher's perspective, obviously there's the cost perspective, how is that direct primary care looked at before and how is that different, you know, than before?
Well, again, that's a new thing for us this year. Our staff is really, really enjoying it, because how it was sold to them was that, you know, we're giving them a $500 HRA card if they go to NextEra for use there. So really it's free coverage. Second thing is you know, it's just like any other industry right now. Everybody's, you know, expected to do more for less, you know, more hours, more everything else. So it's a lot difficult for some of these teachers, even though we're on a 4-day week, we work Monday through Thursday primarily and usually are off Fridays, but a lot of those teachers end up working Fridays to do some catch up and things like that. And it's nice to have Dr. Flanagan come down, set up an office in the school and actually see people out of the school building. The other thing that's really nice, the flexibility offers, he's got an app on the phone where we can get on there and, you know, say it's, you thought you had strep throat, you know, I think I have strep throat, put in your phone number and he will actually video call you and have a conversation. So if, for example, I utilized the service, I was out of state. I mean, I was 1,000 miles away and I utilized that Spruce service once and it was fantastic. He prescribed a prescription right to the place I was at. So, there's a lot of benefits. It makes it a lot more convenient. The time savings for people having to drive all the way to the Denver metro area to the doctor versus just walking over to another building has been tremendous, and it's added a lot of value. Plus, like Brian said, the savings of not having to go to urgent care and spend, you know, $50 to $100 just to walk in the door. I mean, people recognize that as well.
You know, here we are, you know, during the COVID pandemic. Curious, you know, has there been any changes in the direct primary care, and have they been helpful for that? I mean, they playing any role in terms of how your staff, you know, gets care and responds to this situation, or even how you, you know, are thinking about, you know, reopening in the fall?
You know, we've actually had a couple employees have already had the COVID and they went through the testing process and everything else. We've had a few got tested that came back negative. We've been pretty fortunate at Bennett. We really haven't seen a whole lot of impact to our bills yet, because our staff's relatively healthy because they're proactive and they go to the doctor and things like that. As far as opening up next year, there's still a lot to be determined statewide and even at the federal level of what we can and can't do. So that's kind of a hard question to ask. But as far as medical, I think that, you know, Dr. Flanagan will still be able to come in and serve the people that he's doing, and we can keep kind of a status quo with that, which is a great thing right now.
Yeah, it's nice. And with an app like the Spruce app, you know, you can, like you said, you can be 1,000 miles away and it doesn't really matter. So it's great to hear about that. We talked a little bit about, you know, some of the cost savings, like the claim that $200,000 cancer case that went down to $30,000, if I recall the number right. You know, it's really the last piece, which you did, which is, you know, leaving behind the value extracting PPO networks, right? And you've gone down the path of reference-based pricing, which for those folks who aren't familiar with that, it basically pays typically on a multiple of Medicare. And I don't know the specifics with Bennett, but generally, if you pay 50% more than Medicare, which covers the costs, by law, the hospitals have to report their costs, so it covers those, despite what you'll hear sometimes. Typically, you pay 50% over that. 98% of the time, you know, most, you know, around the country, there'll be no pushback. But Colorado is one of the most expensive states for hospitals. It can be challenging, right? If you don't, this is the fifth step. This is the one that if you don't do it, as well as you can, there can be issues. So curious a little bit, you know, both the positive and potential negative of what sort of savings you gave one example, and, you know, what have been the education issues with members? How does that work? And does it happen after the fact? Do you do things before the fact? Just maybe explain a little bit about how that all works.
Well, we started off really, that was a little bit of a leap of faith for sure. And I think probably if I had it to do over again, we would be in, you know, a different path. The reference-based pricing, you know, it's a tool. It is a way of approaching a problem. It may or may not be the tool, if that makes sense. And one of the things to make it work, and this is what we learned the hard way for sure, and Keith would, I think, back me up on this, is that, you know, you need to know your marketplace very well in terms of where are the facilities that are amiable and will work with a plan. You know, we never pay at a loss. We never pay for less than what it costs. We always, you know, make sure that the facilities end up in a profitable situation. It's just that some of those hospitals in this neighborhood are used to, you know, making too much money, and they're kind of built around the fact that they're going to make too much money, and we don't want them to make too much money. So we've been able to, over the last 3 years, really, you know, narrow down the facilities that we want our people to go to. And we definitely, you know, incentivize those employees to end up in the right place. And that's worked really well. They understand now that, you know, Hospital A is a great hospital for us. They work with us and they're high quality. Hospital B maybe, you know, is a little bit going to be a little tougher for us. And we might not, you know, get the results that we want there. And we can kind of show that statistically. So, you know, we've spent, I think, the last 2 years really educating employees on here's where to go. Get things done here, you know, with our team inside, you know, medical management. They were able to steer a couple of employees away from some problems. And then there were some situations this year where an employee really wanted to go to those high cost facilities because that's where their doctor, you know, recommended, et cetera, et cetera. And we were able to work with those facilities to get the cash price and get everything taken care of on the front end. And so, you know, like I said, you know, reference-based reimbursement is a tool, but it's got to be done right. And you can't just throw it out there and hope for the best because it's going to cream you. You've got to make sure that you understand, you know, where are the facilities. And it goes back to some of the things we talked about in local. You know, what facility is going to work with this? Do we have a good arrangement with them? Are they aware of what's going on before that employee gets care? Because if they do, then they're usually pretty amiable. We haven't had any problems once, you know, the communication is open, so to speak. Where they don't like to, you know, where they don't like to, and we've seen this in other clients too, is, you know, they don't like to be blindsided. And so if you can help the hospital not be blindsided, they always appreciate that.
Yeah, one of the things I like to add to that is going on, Brian, where he's talking about the cash pricing here. And I mean, just to be blunt, I mean, I think that the system is a little broke, and I think it's very corrupt at points. You know, we had an employee that was going in to get a procedure done, and going through the insurance, we were trying to get a, what do you call it, Brian, like a prepay, pre-approval. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be around $90,000 to get this operation, this surgery done. And so me and Brian were talking. He's like, man, that's way too much money. So he called the same hospital, talked to him, asked for a cash price, and they dropped it to $8,900. They took almost 90% off the bill because we were paying cash, and just the corrupt. I mean, that upset me. Made me furious that was actually the way that happened. I mean, I'm glad we saved the money, but you can see how the system works, and that's one of the things I've been exposed to the last couple of years, is actually physically seeing how things operate. And you know, by us doing the way we're doing, instead of giving Medicare plus 300, 400, 500% like some of the Aetnas and Cignas of the world do, I mean, we're given 50 and we're still getting the same coverage. So I've been very proud of what we've been able to accomplish with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the whole discount game is a funny one. I mean, I can give you a 99% discount on anything if I get to pick the denominator. and yeah, it's pretty crazy. You know, there's a link on the screen that we'll have up that, you know, to download my books for free. One of the chapters that tends to surprise people related to this is how in the real market, prices are flat, and the real market I define as quite significant. Because of high deductibles, the cash pay market is very significant, and kind of related direct contracts between like hospital surgery centers and employers. We had an earlier webinar with Pacific Steel. They had 5,000 direct contracts in place in 2 years. They're really simple, straightforward, fair contracts in that market. Because again, once you think about it, it's like doctors and nurses aren't getting paid fundamentally different. The inputs aren't fundamentally different. It's just been, unfortunately, there's a non-real market that you might call rigged that has something else entirely. And so as we go into a few of the questions that we have from folks, can you just wrap up with each of you, maybe one or two pieces of advice you'd give to other employers who are going down that journey? If there's, you know, one or two things that would jump out at you, what would be at the top of the list? Maybe Brian, you start, and we'll wrap up with Keith.
I think it's just very important. I think the most important component of all of this is communication. And, you know, it is so important for your employees to understand who the boogeyman is. Okay. And so as you're making a change, you know, make sure that they understand what has gone on in your plan for the past, and give them history, 10 years, you know, 10, 15 years of where you used to be. And Dave, you said it, are we getting something better because we're paying more? And the answer, of course, is no. And so, you know, that communication with employees is so crucial, but when they get it, they will be behind you 100%. And so I would say to all the employers out there, you know, have the courage to know that your employees want you to make this change. They, you know, sometimes we talk to employer groups, well, we don't want to upset our employees in any way. Your employees want change, but whether you know it or not, they are as tired of this, and it's causing as much stress as you can possibly imagine in their lives. If they have a $25 or, you know, $3,000 out of pocket, even, you know, it's debilitating for your employees. And so, you know, like I said, have that communication ready. Be sure we paint the boogeyman, and then also have courage to know that your employees actually do want you to change.
Yeah. Keith, what are your thoughts?
You know, I would agree, especially with the courage. And that was the hardest part for us, is the fear of the unknown, and getting that sold to our staff and to our board of education and everything else. And we've made this jump. You know, my answer to them at the point was, you know, hey, we're getting a 10, 12% increases next year. If this doesn't work, how can it be any worse? You know? And the first year we came in 250, or right at 250,000, I believe, under budget, because we had a good claims year. And they were just astonished. We're like, wow, we have 250,000. A windfall, you know? We can give step increases to our teachers. I mean, it was the fear of the unknown. I mean, it was a risk that I think people should take. I mean, don't be fearful of it, because it does work. It's a good process.
Yeah, no, and reality is, status quo is pretty risky. You know, you consider that, you know, to Brian's point, you know, there's a reason that the health insurance industry has the lowest net promoter score, which is a measure of customer satisfaction of any industry that I've heard of, lower than cable companies, lower than airlines. And so once you unpack, right, why that is, you know, understandably people can be skeptical about the change. But once you know, it's just education. And particularly if there's one arena that should understand education, it would be school districts. You educate them, they're smart people, you connect the dots. Then, like you were talking about, Keith, you hear that 90,000 to 8,900 and you're like, what the, you know what? Right. Then you start to realize what it's about. So, again, thanks for going through that. We're going to take a couple questions. And if anybody else has questions, bring them in. But it kind of relates to what we were just talking about on the internal communication. So how was the HR and benefits manager the school district brought on board with the need to change from the status quo? Is there a separate HR and benefits person that you work with, Keith?
I do have an HR lady. She works with me though, and I'm the benefits person though. I kind of take care of all that. So that was pretty easy to bring on board. But But as far as the overall communication, that has been the hardest point, because, you know, one of the things that I've noticed is when we have our insurance meeting, just because of plan design and the way it is with our school, our insurance meeting typically falls on the last staff in-service day of the year before summer break. Well, they're done. I mean, they want to get out. They want to go home. And I mean, and you can talk and you can talk, you can talk, you can say anything. So Brian's had to get pretty creative on how he's approached them to keep their attention. And he's done really well. I mean, the questions have went down tremendously. I mean, I think people have a greater understanding of how this process works now than they did before. But the communication was definitely a very big process with this.
Great. Related, but pulling back, you know, more broadly, who among the leadership at Bennett were hesitant to change, and how were they brought on board, and who was the driver of the need to try the new path?
So our superintendent was another, at the time, she was a superintendent of a smaller school further eastern Colorado, kind of on the way to Kansas out there. And they were part of there's a lot of little schools out there. I mean, tons of them. And they were part of this consortium, I guess you would call it, of this health insurance trust, you know, more or less. And anyway, to make a long story short, the guy that was running the trust basically took the money and ran and left them all high and dry and left them with all these big, huge bills. So whenever I brought anything to her attention, other than, you know, like a Cigna or Humana or Kaiser, something that everybody's really familiar with and really comfortable with, you know, it was almost one of those once bitten, twice shy thing, you know. But, you know, she's been on board with us the whole time. She's worked this whole time, and she sees the reward. She's seen the value. She's seen the money. She's seen the, you know, the smile on the teachers' faces and the kids' faces when we were able to do things like playgrounds, and, you know, when we were able to give pay raises and Christmas bonuses. And I mean, it's been a worthwhile process. So she's been on board with it the whole time. But at first, she was very hesitant, very unknown.
I got a lot of scowls in those early meetings. There's a lot of scowls, the folded arms like this.
Yeah. No, it's understandable. Great. Well, I don't see any other questions. I think we covered the waterfront pretty well. I know there's been some stuff written up on Bennett. And so we'll be sharing that with folks and through our various channels. And again, congratulations on what you've achieved and how you've stuck at it and, you know, reap the rewards. I mean, the favorite part of the story for me is hearing about the playgrounds and Christmas bonuses and all that type of thing. That's really where it's at, that human level. So again, thanks for taking the time to share your story. Hopefully, you know, the reality is right now, a lot of school districts are going to get hit pretty hard with budget cuts because states are really getting hammered with tax revenues. And, you know, you're definitely ahead of the game in terms of being much more resilient to that. So again, congratulations. Thank you for your time. I hope everybody has a great rest of the day, and let you go.
Great. Thanks.
Thanks, gang.
All right. Thanks.